Jojo Rabbit is the story of a 10-year-old boy in Nazi Germany who spends his days training to be a soldier in Hitler's army, while his father is away at war and his mother works hard to keep their family afloat, all the while having Hitler as his imaginary friend. In this comedy satire, director Taika Waititi shows an oddly colorful and almost upbeat take on Nazi Germany, while simultaneously giving us a lesson in tolerance through the eyes of a child. It has an impressive cast, inclusive of Scarlett Johansson, Taika Waititi, Sam Rockwell, Rebel Wilson, and Stephen Merchant. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Hey guys, welcome back to Screenfish. This is Julie Levac. I'm taking over from Steve Norton today, and I am joined by, one of my fave people in the world, Paul.
Hi everybody. Welcome to the this take on Jojo Rabbit.
The Levac attack. He hates when I do that.
I do, very much so.
But it's so good, right? Yes, well, Julie and Paul, we are taking over for Steve today, and we're talking about Jojo Rabbit, the newest film by Taika Waititi. This is a very interesting film. I think that it's going to have some strong reviews, some strong opinions about it, because it's not your typical movie. It's a satirical film. It's a comedy. It's actually really, really hilarious, really smart, clever comedy. And one thing, well, first of all, why don't I just ask you really quick what you thought about the movie, and then we'll get into a little bit more detail.
I really liked it. This is one of my picks from the moment I saw the first poster, trailer, take your pick. It was something I'd wanted to see. I basically pushed Julie kicking and screaming to see the movie. because it just seemed right up my alley. I really like satire when done properly and smartly and doesn't treat the audience like morons, that actually gives them credit for mm-hmm. who they are. And I very much appreciate that in movies in general, and more specifically in my comedies. And I saw this as it turned out to be mm-hmm. a great film for that regard.
Yeah, I didn't not want to see this, to be fair. It looked good, but it wasn't one of my top picks at TIFF this year. And for a little bit of history, if you guys don't know, Jojo Rabbit won People's Choice at TIFF this year, 2019. And so I was actually kind of surprised by that. And really quickly, I will say, I really liked the movie. Like I said, it was hilarious. It was really well done. The cast was incredible. I mean, there's some pretty heavy hitters in this one. Scarlett Johansson, obviously Taika Waititi, who directed it and played Hitler in it. Sam Rockwell, Rebel Wilson, Stephen Merchant, amazing. And then the kids in this movie, Roman Griffin Davis, Thomasine McKenzie, and Archie Yates.
Don't get me started on Archie. I think he stole the show, to be quite honest. I think he was one of the better characters in the movie by far.
I'm really excited to see what he does in the future. And I really, really liked Thomasine McKenzie, who played Elsa. And we'll get more into her character in a bit. But she was incredible. She's another New Zealand actor. I mean, I don't think we've seen her a lot in North America, but she's incredible.
But that's also with Taika's connections, probably knew her from back home. Yes. And brought her in the forefront in the movie too, right?
Thankfully, yeah. So Jojo Rabbit, although it wasn't my first pick, did look good. And I will say it's basically because like my experience with satire isn't, great. My very first review on Screenfish was a satirical film. And I was sort of like, what's going on here? It was so weird and random.
What movie was that?
I can't remember. It was that Netflix Brad Pitt movie. I can't remember the name of it. It was sort of, it was a war movie.
I'm drawing a blank.
You saw it with me, but I can't remember the name. That's how, memorable it was. But so when it comes to satire, I'm just a little bit...
War Machine.
War Machine, thank you. I'm a little bit tentative, I guess. But this one was so well done. Very smart. Like, they didn't treat the audience like idiots, which I know is one of your pet peeves.
Yeah, I don't, if you're listening to this, you're probably of the same ilk. You watch a lot of movies. You see the tropes that they fall into. I very much appreciate when they treat me like an intelligent human being and mm-hmm. don't feed me everything.
Yeah.
Let me figure it out. You know, don't spoon feed me all the jokes or all the plot points and let me kind of follow the breadcrumbs along and get there myself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, initially I was wondering how comedic it was going to be until I saw Rebel Wilson in the trailer and I'm like, oh, we're going there.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good. But honestly, Taika Waititi says that this is an anti-hate film and it's pro-peace. He just wants people to be tolerant and spread more love. And I want more people to hear this description of the movie, because I think people are seeing it and seeing a comedy based in Nazi Germany and are just freaked out.
Mm.
But it's just, I mean, yeah, it's a comedy based in Nazi Germany, but it really is an anti-hate film. And I think the whole thing is based around tolerance.
So I hadn't heard that description until you shared it with me just now. That mm-hmm. makes me think that Scarlett Johansson's character seems to be more of Taika's voice in this film, comes across as the motherly figure and basically pulls everybody out of, using the time from a black and white movie into Technicolor, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Out of the muck of the war and into just spreading love and peace and music and taking time to dance and look at flowers.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, my gosh. Honestly, Scarlett Johansson's character, her name was Rosie. She played Jojo's mother. She was honestly the ray of sunshine of the entire movie, a ray of sunshine in this really dark time. She seems super caring and loving. She's just trying to cope, you know what I mean? Like, her husband is away at war. Her son is in training to be at war. And she's just sort of trying to cope. She goes to work. She tries to support her family.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out that all the while she is hiding a Jewish girl in her house,
mm-hmm.
in the walls of her house upstairs. So she's, it's help me out here with a description of Rosie, how you felt about her.
Well, keep in mind, as Steve mentions, this is rated S for spoilers, so we will get into a lot of details of this and what
spoiler,
happens.
She's hiding a Jewish girl.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I figured it's a good disclaimer to throw out there.
I think it might be in the trailer too, so it's fine.
That's fine.
Whatever.
Either way. The thing I find with Rosie, I think, I really feel like she was, Taika's voice in this film, and I've already said that, but the meaning that if he really wants to spread love and spread his message through this movie, Rosie is the mouthpiece for this, and she exemplifies that in everything she does, even if it's just from constantly having her son, or teaching her son to tie his shoes 40 times, to donning a mustache and playing Jojo's dad.
Oh, that's
to
right.
To a certain extent.
That was such an interesting scene.
To bring home, discipline in the house that he's just not paying attention to his mother. So she reaches into the fireplace, puts some soot on her face to make the, 5 o'clock shadow.
Mm.
And then puts on her husband's, military jackets.
And I think that says a lot in that scene. And thank you for reminding me of it. Because not only was there a comedic aspect, but it was sort of like showing that she's doing all that she can as a parent. And she was sort of at her wit's end. Or at least, and she's very, very patient with Jojo. Mm-hmm. Especially considering she doesn't agree politically with what's going on. Or it doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, no, she doesn't. Because she's hiding the Jewish girl upstairs.
Right.
That's completely flies in the face of it.
Well, and it's, she seems very, what would you call her? Like, she maintains composure and she doesn't freak out.
She's calm in the face of danger. She has to be. Because the problem becomes is if even her son detects that something's wrong, her son could then report her.
Because he's such a
hardcore Nazi.
He's like a hardcore Nazi.
Yes.
And I mean,
I think Stephen Merchant's line, when he comes to inspect the house, Merchant plays an SS officer who inspects houses on a regular basis, trying to find people. And he comes over and says something to the effect of, I wish more boys had the same fervor you had for the Führer, I think was the line.
That's funny.
And, you know, I appreciated that. It's, you know, play on words, whatever, fine. But that's the kind of attitude that he had. He had pictures of Hitler up on his wall. You know, he speaks to his, you know, pseudo version of Hitler every chance he can get.
Mm-hmm.
Every time he's alone. And every time he's alone, Hitler's trying to get him to kill somebody. Usually.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that I feel like there's so much that can be said about Rosie. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's just so beautiful when she takes her son for a walk, and she just seems to always try to find the beauty in things, all the simple things, and I guess trying to sort of broaden his horizons, pull him away from all of the crazy war and show him some simplicity and some beauty. And then that is where we see this incredible scene of just the shot of her shoes, where Jojo is, you see Jojo's face, but I think Rosie is up on sort of a brick wall of some sort.
She's up on a ledge.
And then you see just her shoes. And immediately I was like, oh, that's a really interesting scene. I just took it at face value. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But there is a lot of meaning towards that scene of the shoes, because later, spoiler alert, Jojo's walking down the street and he runs. He just turns to the side and sees his mother's shoes in his face. And she was hanging in the town square or whatever you want to call it. So she unfortunately was hanged for presumably being caught hiding the Jewish girl in her house.
Crimes against the Nazis. Right. I don't necessarily think it was for hiding the Jewish girl, because if it was, they would have found the Jewish girl and got rid of her too.
Oh, that's fair.
I think it was just found that she was working against the Nazis and they put an end to it. I think the shoes thing is relevant because it's a way that she teaches Jojo to fend for himself as the movie progresses.
Yeah.
Because the constant shoe tying, the constant reminders of tying her shoes, and then that's, pardon the pun, tied together with the shots of her shoes, and then shows her hanging there, and that's all you see of her feet initially. But the audience knows immediately, and I heard audible gasps throughout the theater when I heard.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I'm actually getting a little bit emotional thinking about it, because I remember specifically in the theater, the second that they showed her shoes, everybody was gasping. It was very powerful. So I think that that's one of the things about this film where it's really funny and satirical, and but also really kind of deep and heavy in spots.
Definitely. One of the things I appreciate about this film, probably the most personally, is the chances that he was able to take. In the sense that everything kind of lined up for him to make this film. I don't think if he doesn't make Thor Ragnarok, this film gets made. Right. I don't think if Thor Ragnarok was a bomb, this gets made. I don't think, to be honest, if he doesn't get paid for Thor Ragnarok, I don't think this film gets made, period. Because,
I was just going to say, I think he did write it quite some time ago.
Yes.
And, I guess it just so happened to be.
Well, I'm more trying to get at that the state of our society and how we don't value satire as an art form anymore. I say that just not necessarily comedy, but just a straight art form, where everybody's like, well, you can't joke about that. That's too serious. You can't have that as a joke.
Right?
That kind of attitude is what I'm more meaning towards. And if he's not successful in his previous movies, no studio takes a chance and gets this movie made.
Well, it would be like, who is this guy coming in with this like ballsy...
Well, he did have a couple films that were somewhat successful beforehand with Boy, and I'm drawing a blank on his other one.
There was one. Even the gentleman who introduced the movie at TIFF was like, Taika Waititi is one of my favorite directors. He was just pouring into it.
Yeah. I think he's got a lot of chops as a director and a writer, but I say all that basically to come down to that I think we need more films like this.
Mm-hmm.
Not about the subject matter, not about the topic. We need more films that doesn't take itself too seriously, that is able to poke fun at current society and how things are in the world, without having to worry about the backlash from saying those things.
That's fair.
I think if we get caught too much up into control culture in the sense that, you know, you need to, you know, fall in line, you need to not joke about that stuff, you need to, you know, do what I say and you know, you're not allowed to say that kind of thing anymore. Right. I think that's where we run into problems as a society as a whole. I think I still need to be able to discuss and talk about stuff and joke about stuff if I need to. You don't have to like it. You also don't have to laugh at it.
Right.
You don't have to pay money for it either.
Yeah.
That's how you vote if you don't like something, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, some of the best comedy, in fact, I would say the majority of the best comedy comes out of the darkest of times. Mm-hmm. And that's how people cope. And I think that that's important. It's an important coping mechanism. I think that we do need more content like this, but I think that it just, you need to be careful about it because Taika Waititi is just very talented and very smart, and very funny and can do this sort of thing well. I think that if you get a handful of other directors to do a movie like this, it would probably bomb.
I hear you. But that's where the voting of the money comes in. Yeah. Right? I have no idea what the finances are on this or how much it's making right now. Mm-hmm. It should make a ton as far as I'm concerned because I think it's well written, it's entertaining, it's fun.
Yes.
The problem becomes is I'm not sure how it will translate to dollars, if let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's fair. And you know what I think? I think it's only gotten a release in LA and New York so far, if I'm not mistaken, and then they're going to do a bigger release. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like in terms of cities, if it's going to be everywhere. Right. We'll look into that, but it's going to be interesting to see, especially considering it won People's Choice in Toronto, which, although I liked the movie and I think it was worthy, I was sort of shocked at the win, especially because we actually saw Jojo Rabbit on the last day of TIFF as they were announcing the winner. So that meant that everybody in the theater with us, it was too late to vote for the movie.
Yeah.
They had cut it off the night before. So there was a whole screening of people that couldn't vote for it. And even without that whole theater of people, it still won. So it's impressive. Like, it won. It legit won. Anyway.
Well, from a box office perspective, it actually beat out Joker in New Zealand.
Stop it. Oh, I guess that makes sense, because Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
But that's a big one.
Everywhere else, not so much.
That's fair. So, other than speaking about Rosie, and just before we move on, I will say that Rosie had this incredible quote, which was, "Love is the strongest thing in the world," which I thought was lovely, and it really just really speaks to Rosie so much. And she said to Jojo, "A 10-year-old shouldn't be celebrating war and talking politics." So, again, I just think she's such a special character, and I think she was really kind of like the poster character for the whole thing. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I almost want to talk with Steve Merchant a little bit, because he was also one of my favorite characters in the movie.
He's fun.
You have a tall, 6'2", pale white man playing pale white British man playing a Nazi SS officer who makes zero attempt to hide his British accents.
He tried, I think. I think he tried to put on a bit of a different accent.
Okay, if he tried, he failed miserably, but it fit very, very well as far as I'm concerned.
That's funny.
In my books, it harkened back to a lot of the old Monty Python sketches was able to pull that off.
All right. I'll give you that. Yeah, I won't say the best scene, but a very funny scene is when they do come to search the house, and basically everybody says Heil Hitler, but they all say it to each other and everybody has to say it to one another. Yes. And like, it just is a never ending scene of Heil Hitler's, and it just doesn't end. Anyway.
It's a who's on first for Hitler is what it is.
That's funny. No, he's really good. I think other than Rosie, another big, huge part of this movie and what really speaks to the tolerance aspect of it is the relationship between Jojo and Elsa, who is played by Thomasine McKenzie, and Jojo, who's played by Roman Griffin Davis. So Jojo discovers this Jewish girl hiding in his walls. And it's so funny because immediately, just the way it was shot, the way that Elsa came out of the wall, you know, I think, if I'm not mistaken, her fingertips wrap around the door frame and she comes out looking like something out of a horror film.
Yeah, very, very Grudge-like.
Very Grudge.
Yeah.
Creepy. And that's just sort of how JoJo was seeing it. And all of these things that JoJo was saying about Jewish people, like, oh, I hear they can look just like us. And I know someone said that they heard that Jewish people can read minds. And Elsa just sort of fed into this. She just played along with it. I mean, she was probably so bored hiding in the wall. She played along with JoJo's imagination or all of the crazy stories that they've probably heard about Jewish people. So they played into it, and it was a very, very slow evolution of their relationship.
Yep.
But they sort of realized that, well, I would say JoJo realized that, Elsa's kind of just like me, you know what I mean? She's a kid just like me. She's nice. She's kind. She isn't what everybody says that Jewish people are. And,
well, hold on. What do you mean by, isn't what everybody says Jewish people are? Because keep in mind context, this is also Nazi Germany, where they say that Jewish people can read minds and that Jewish people, you know, eat bats. And like,
well, that's what all I'm saying. Yeah. Like that's what they think, or these are the stories that they've been told. Mm-hmm. So JoJo's realizing that that isn't the case.
Yeah, so the demonization of the Jewish race made by the Nazis is not accurate.
Right, exactly. And so although it was slow, and although he was, he didn't really want to believe it, and he had this make-believe Hitler BFF in the back of his mind saying, no, forget her. You need to do something or say something about this.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to sort of overcome it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there was one moment where he kind of got over it and realized and said, hey, you know what, I'm wrong.
I might disagree with you there.
No?
Because I think I recall him literally throwing Hitler out of a window.
But I'm thinking of like...
If there was a time, like a definitive line in the sand, I think him throwing his imaginary friend out the window is probably one of them.
Fair, but even after that, wasn't there a moment where the war is over, and did he tell Elsa that the Germans won? Or am I making that up?
He did initially, because he didn't want to lose her.
He wanted to keep her there with him. Because his mother was gone.
Because he was already in love with her at the time.
Yeah, he was in love with her.
Yes.
And his mother was gone, and I guess he was probably quite lonely.
Yeah. And he fessed up to it pretty quick and still got slapped for it.
Oh, that's right. Okay, got it. That's funny.
But...
yeah.
I think she understood, and the language he was using changed towards the end was about, you know, let us go and make a life of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I just think it was a very interesting relationship, and it shows the judgment of people, and then it's the judgment of people because of their backgrounds, and then when we actually get to know each other, we realize that we're all just people, we're all similar. So it was a really beautiful relationship, and like I said, Thomasine McKenzie was incredible, and she played that role really, really well, and I'm excited to see, I think she's been in a lot of stuff in New Zealand, but I'm excited to see what she does in the future. And I would love to move on super quick to Fräulein Rom. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Fräulein Rom.
Okay, well, you know, German expert over here.
Sorry, I'm a little more up to date on my Germanese.
Germany? Oh my God. So this is...
Germany? German.
Yeah.
Hashtag dad jokes.
Oh! So this was Rebel Wilson's character, and she just played, just a funny joke sort of sideline character. She did Rebel Wilson, German Rebel Wilson, do you know what I mean? But there was one line that she said that I can't get over, and it was, I've had 18 kids for Germany, such a great year to be a girl. And I just thought this was so interesting, and this was sort of, in my opinion, one of the only real shout-outs to sort of feminism or lack thereof in Nazi Germany. And it's such a great time to be a girl. And she was actually training these girls. You know, the guys would go off and train to be soldiers, and the girls would go off and train to, I don't know.
Keep house.
Keep house, yeah. Like, support their men or support their families. Yep. Probably be secretaries or nurses. I don't know.
Well, because if you think about it, the Germans held the idea that men were to fight and that the women's are to...
The women's.
You heard me. Are there to raise the men until they can fight again.
Right.
Right?
For sure. For sure. I just thought it was interesting. And then she headed up burning of the books and that sort of stuff. So although she played a smaller and more comedic role, there were a couple of really quick little things that she did that I'm like, whoa, like those were big, kind of big statements. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So one thing I thought was interesting that when I was listening to some interviews with Taika Waititi, he mentioned that this movie was adapted from a novel called Caging Skies by Christine Lunens. And I thought that was really interesting. I think it was just about, obviously about Nazi Germany. But did you know anything else about that book at all?
I know absolutely nothing.
No, but I just thought it was, I had no idea it was adapted from a novel. So I think I'm actually going to look into that a little bit more, just because I'm really curious to know what that story was all about, and if it was based on a true story, if it was a fiction based in Nazi Germany. So yeah, that's an interesting little homework piece for myself. Definitely. And for all of you. Go read the book. No.
Well, I also appreciated, actually, Peter Jackson was in town and introduced Taika for his acceptance speech of the People's Choice Award.
Ooh.
And obviously, being countrymen, I think that played a big part. And, you know, I appreciated it. That's all.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think I mentioned this earlier, but just in general, I was really surprised at how bright and colorful this movie was. It's certainly not something that you would expect from a war movie, so to speak.
But I think that was absolutely intentional, though. Mm-hmm. Because of all the stereotypical war movies, let's film this in a blue filter kind of war movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, let's make everything dark and drab. Yet you have Alfie Allen running up and saying, they gave us new uniforms, and it's paper mache Germany uniforms. Right? Like, and they're giving an 8-year-old a rocket launcher. Or, well, to be historically accurate, a Panzerschreck, but that's beside the point.
Right. It was, like, incredibly gorgeous. Like, it was a stunning-looking film.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it just sort of catches you off guard a little bit.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. Anyway, so I think this is a good time to do a little screen it or skip it.
And Julie's looking at me, so that's probably me to go first. definitely screen it. I think this was one of my favorite films of the year. I can't tell you what's going to happen come award season, although I would like to see this at least have a Best Adapted Screenplay nomination.
Ooh.
At minimum.
Yeah.
And then we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would say screen it as well. I would probably avoid streaming it if you can, because, like I just said, it's really pretty. It's a really nice one to see on screen, and it's one of those ones where you'll get a little bit of audience reaction, and it's just kind of fun to hear the laughs, hear the gasps, and... Wouldn't you say?
I think more so the audience participation is what would do it for me. The visualizations, while great, can perfectly be experienced at home
on a mobile decent device TV.
Or what have you. Yeah.
I mean, mobile device, come on. Mm. No way. But anyway, yes, so take a look at it, but I'm not quite sure if it's coming to, like, a city near you. So look into it. See if there's going to be a wide release or if you can catch it at a theater near you. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening. I hope that we did Steve justice. I hope that you go out and see Jojo Rabbit. And thank you so much again for listening. See ya.
Bye.